Hi everyone, and welcome to the Curve Mindset podcast with McGinley Coaching. I'm your host and founder, Lonnie McGinley. Today we're joined by Siggy Raggy, but Siggy's actually going to pronounce his second name because I actually can pronounce this in Icelandic. So, how are you, Siggy?
I'm good, thanks.
And just
well, last name, Siggy Eyjólfsson.
Oh, yeah.
It's a tough one.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So, we've tried this six times and I still can't get it right, so we'll just try again. But, at least I've got the first name right, which is the most important. But can you just tell listeners a bit about background about yourself and the kind of journey you've been on?
Yeah, played football my whole life. I played in Iceland and I went to college in America to play. From there, I played professionally at Walsall Football Club in the third highest league and second highest league in England. Then I went, was it Chester for a while on loan. Went to play from Walsall in Belgium, to play in Belgium in the highest league. Then I moved home to Iceland, started working for the Icelandic FA as coach education director for about 13 years. And then I also started coaching the women's national team of Iceland. From there, I went to coach in the men's game. IPV in Iceland, in Westman Islands. I was there for only one season. Then I went to Norway as assistant coach for Lillestrøm in the men's highest league. Was there two seasons. From there I went to coach in China, back to the women's game. Coached the women's team of Jiangsu Suning. And from there, I took the women's national team as head coach, the women's national team coach of China. Did that and then came home to Iceland to coach in the men's game again, Keflavik. And I've been there for the last 4 years. And my contract ended at the end of last month. So I'm looking for my next coaching job.
No.
That's been my journey.
No, brilliant, because it's a lot to take in, because it's great having experience working in the men's game and in the women's game, but being an ex-pro, you know, it does help open doors to learn new ideas. But a lot of ex-pros go into maybe become a coach or a sporting director or a different... Why did you become a coach from playing? Is it something you were passionate about? Or a lot of young players like to coach in their 20s or 30s so they can actually learn the trades from the other coaches. Is that something you tried to implement when you were trying to start off being coaching?
Yeah, I always wanted to become a coach, and I studied in America. I did exercise and sports science, and did my bachelor's degree in that, and then I did my master's in sports psychology. And I was always thinking, how can I apply this knowledge and experience once I become a coach? Then I was coach education director of the Icelandic FA, like I said, for 13 years. And then you're pretty much going to work every day thinking, how can I improve the coaches in Iceland? What do the coaches need to learn and know? And how can I prepare them for the job? So you're constantly thinking, what's a good coach? And what knowledge does he need? And then you develop your own philosophy as well. So I was always excited about getting an opportunity to coach. And once it came, it was a little bit strange opportunity because it came a little bit as a surprise that I was offered to take the women's national team, because I went to do my UEFA Pro license in England. UEFA actually wrote a letter to the Icelandic FA saying we would like your coach education director to do his pro license so he can prepare the Icelandic pro license in the future. So I went to an English speaking country and I could pretty much pick the country I wanted to. So I went to England, did my pro license there with some fantastic coaches, and during the pro license you had to have a team to coach, and the Icelandic FA did not want me to coach a club team during that time, and the pro license took about a year and a half to acquire. So they offered me to take the women's national team. So yeah, couldn't say no to that.
Yeah, because that's interesting, because we talked about last week, you know, off-air, about the different experiences, and it's actually unusual for a coach to start off in the national team rather than a club team, because you usually get to make mistakes, you know, and learn from, like, different experiences. But you're kind of thrown in a little bit in the deep end, you know, but in a way that's actually probably worked out probably in an advantage, because you get to work in a country that you live in, speak the language, but also get to work with kind of the Icelandic women's team, which again was one of the top teams in Europe or else in the world, you know, a lot, and they're still obviously in that kind of group with the kind of different Scandinavian countries. But you obviously have different experiences working in the women's game, you know, as in the Iceland. But do you think that from the work you did at the start from the Iceland women to when you kind of left, what did you try? What were the kind of difficulties, but also the best parts of it? Because it is working with different players and different, you know, personalities. And I'm just wondering how you kind of dealt with it on a day-to-day basis, because you're not actually working with them day-to-day, but you're trying to develop the programme on a kind of day-to-day basis.
Yeah, it was a very pleasant experience, also a very difficult one, and time-consuming, because I continued as coach education director during the whole time period as well, and coaching the women's national team, so I did a lot of work. I was very fortunate that my assistant coach was very experienced and had been the men's national team coach of Iceland as well, Guðni Kjartansson, so he was very experienced, and he helped me to get started on the job and was with me the whole time. I coached the team for about 7 years, and we managed to go and qualify for the Women's Euros in 2009 and 2013. And in 2013, we went all the way to the quarterfinals, which is still the best results in Iceland's history. So it went really well. It was a lot of work. It was a tough job, but very enjoyable and a great start to my coaching career, I think. And coaching a national team is each job has its own challenge, I think, wherever you go. But different types of challenges. Sometimes you're struggling because you don't have a big budget if you're with the club team. But with the national team, you can pick the best players, and we had a very good team. It was, I think, 21 in the world when I took over, and when I stopped, it was 15th in the world. So we made some steps, some strides forward. But yeah, each job has its own challenge. You just got to deal with them. And if you have good people on your side, you have a good staff with you, which I did. I had experts in each area, so that also will help you a lot, for sure.
Yeah, because, again, kind of combining the roles with the kind of the TD and the head coach, obviously, there's a leadership style. You need to put two or three different hats on. You know, need to coach the coaches, and then coach the players, and then coach the kind of club coaches too in different ways, but also implementing a kind of style of play. Is that something that, from your experience in playing, but also as you said, your assistant was very good, is it good to have that kind of experience around you to go, do you know what, I can go to a club and coach the coaches, but I might actually see some ideas that I can use as part of my experience? Because I think it was Pep Guardiola, he said, we're all, you know, coaches are the biggest thieves. We want to learn, but we also want to try and adapt it to our own style. When you're working at a TD, you're obviously you're one of the top people, but you always want to learn. Is that something, did you prefer kind of coaching the players or the coaches, or was it kind of good to have in a combination of both, so therefore you can have two or three different avenues to learn, but also implement your style and helping other people around you?
I actually like both, to coach the players and the coaches. It has its own challenges, like I said, but you learn a lot from it, and it keeps you updated, and it helps you build connections as well. I was always aware in the beginning that I didn't have a lot of experience as a coach, so I've been in those shoes, so I particularly enjoy when ex-players, ex-professional players, go into coaching to help them along the way in the beginning. We have like a mentor program that I put together as coach education director. We call it the coaching school. So it enables ex-professional players and players and just, you know, coaches that are beginning their journey as coaches to learn from a more experienced coach. So I just tried to implement what we were doing at the women's national team when I had a very experienced assistant coach, and we tried to learn, like build that mentorship program in our coach education program at the Icelandic Cafe. And that's very enjoyable when you can help coaches, because when you're a player and you stop playing and you want to go into coaching, you're a little bit nervous about that transition, and you need some good advice, if you can say it, on how to go into a new job.
Yeah.
So yeah, I enjoyed both.
Yeah, because that's interesting.
And I still...
Yeah, because I was interested in the kind of coaching the coaches, because the coaching school, because we've all, see, when obviously I've looked at the kind of Icelandic, the KSI, a lot of the information around it, and it's very much a, you know, it's a buy-in, you know, from everyone wants to help each other out. It's a kind of family, you know, like everyone wants to try and help with the coaches. But I've seen a lot of the work with sometimes with other sports, you know, like hockey, ice hockey, to, you know, different things that are related to the kind of skill acquisition. Is that when you're kind of a TD, you're obviously trying to lay, well, everything's 90% football and the rest of it's kind of other sport or other ways of learning. Did you try and, even if you're not in the TD, did you try and maybe look at other sports that maybe helped you with kind of different leadership, the different kind of ways of thinking? Because there's obviously in the UK, you've got football, but you also look at rugby, basketball, you know, quite obviously transition work. But the biggest thing I've seen in Iceland is a lot of the kind of, it's a lot of hockey work, because it was quick movements, sort of how to turn with the ball, how to implement a different attacking style, because you only get a certain amount of time. Is that something that you tried to maybe look at when you were coaching the coaches, but also learning a different way of learning, but also implementing the style of play still, so therefore you have that kind of continuity of this kind of same way?
Yeah, you're making good points. I've always tried to implement that in my coaching philosophy, and to use, you know, take a page out of someone else's book who's doing well that might be helping you in your job as a coach. And be open to getting that knowledge from different areas and maybe different sports, like you say. So, and I know professional athletes, professional football players in Iceland, that some of our most successful players have actually contacted people from other sports to help them. So, like, if they were trying to build speed, they might not be looking towards a football coach to help them work on that. They might contact a track and field coach, the national team coach of track and field, and I did it myself also when we were preparing for the final tournament at the Women's Euros in 2009. It was the first time Iceland had qualified with the women's national team, and then I thought, well, who's going to help me prepare for that tournament? So if no football coach in Iceland has done that step before, so then I thought outside the box and contacted the team handball national team coach, who had many times been to big tournaments like that, and tried to learn from his experience. So I did an interview with him, and I find that when you reach out to people and ask them about their experience, they're always willing to share. I haven't come across anyone who said, no, I don't want to share my knowledge with you. But you just got to be open and reach out to those people. But also when you look at sports and you look at the stories that are going on every day when you read the news, if you're thinking, how can I use that in my sport to become better at what I'm doing, then there's definite possibilities there. Like, if you want to become better at public speaking, you might be reaching out to a person who's a really good speaker. It might not be within football, but if you reach out to that person, it will help you develop that skill.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Because skill, you know, we talk about, you know, the job in China. You know what I mean? And obviously, it's a different language, a different culture. You know, a different style. But I'm just intrigued by the. A lot of this is like the process of, like, you go to another country. You know, and you obviously sometimes it might take a couple of weeks, might take a couple of months, might take. Some people don't settle because of different things. But when you're kind of there, going into a kind of new club, you know, and you've been employed, what's the kind of first things you try and do? Is it a lot of, there's usually two ways. There's usually the sit back and watch everything around you and see what's going on, or there's the, we're going to go in right away and change things, but we've done our research beforehand, you know, of like, this person's not very, they might be late, or there's a track record or something. What was the kind of process before you went to China, and then when you're in the club team, and then when you get put into the, sorry, when you work for the kind of Chinese national team, what was the kind of differences, and how did you adapt to the kind of language and the culture there?
Yeah, so it was really a surprise when I went to China. I was unemployed at that moment, and I was just visiting people at the Icelandic FA who I used to work with, and someone said to me, "Hey, someone's trying to reach you from China." And I said, "What? I don't know anyone from China." But he gave me that contact information, and that person was trying to reach me and had a job offer for me. So a couple of weeks later, I was in China, and I didn't speak the language. And so I had someone translating everything. Was a great person. His name was Frank, and he was translating everything for me. And we had a lot of players, probably 40 players that I had to have a look at, and try to like figure out who are the best ones, who's going to be the players in the first team. And I had a Chinese staff that spoke very little English, most of them. And then I brought an Icelandic assistant coach with me. So we were two together living in Nanjing, coaching the Jiangsu Suning team. And I think it was Fabio Capello had the men's team. So it was a huge club and great facilities. Absolutely no problems there. And the team had struggled the year before, almost got relegated, but they changed the coaches, and we managed to bring in two foreign players that helped us a lot. We had a successful season. It was a very enjoyable experience. The culture was totally different, so we had to adjust a lot to the culture. We couldn't make everyone Icelandic. We had to become a little bit Chinese. So, but you try to implement some things that you think are strong in your culture, but you always have to adjust to the culture where you're working at. I've worked in different countries now, and each country is different. So you bring something good to the table, but also from your culture, but you always have to adjust as well. So, what was the second part of the question?
Yeah, sorry, this is Scottish accent. It probably doesn't help. But you obviously transitioned to the kind of national team. Do you think the experience you had from Iceland, you know, national team, women's team, to the Chinese national team actually helped because you've done the job before? And I know some people have, if you've got a similar job, then you can maybe tweak it or make it a little bit better or a bit smaller. But do you think that was an advantage, having that experience working as a national team coach before you went to got the job in the kind of China's A team?
Yes, absolutely. I think the reason why I got the job in Jiangsu Suning was because I did really well with the Icelandic women's national team. we played against China in one of my first matches, and we beat them 4-1. So, and then the team manager at the Chinese team came to me after the match, and he wasn't happy, and he said to me after the match, "You beat us 4-1. Maybe you should be the China coach." And I said, "No, I just started with the Iceland team." So, but who knows in the future? And he remembered that talk many, many years later, and contacted me because he was from the Jiangsu province, and said they've contacted me to try to find a foreign coach. Are you interested? So that's how it came about that I went to China. And yeah, you bring your experience with you, and once you've been a head coach and working with a good staff with you, try to bring that to your new job. And that's basically how it came about, and you use that experience from all your coaching jobs whenever you get a new coaching job, I think.
Yeah, well, let's talk about this. Is interesting because you talked about the coach, a bit he wasn't happy, and then you flipped that negative into a positive, you know. And I always remember one of my friends, and he said he went to a country, did a little bit of work, as in it was a total random experience, but they said he was there for a week on holiday, but he actually managed to just do about a couple of coaching sessions, and 5 years later, he's an assistant now at a national team. But it's great that kind of we experience. But do you think the biggest things, actually, you talk about networking and also having gone out of your comfort zone, do you think sometimes it's good to promote yourself in a lot of ways, and then sometimes good to just go, okay, I'm going to stay quiet for a couple of months or a couple of weeks and just go, I'm doing my work, you know, but in the background I'm making things happen, like doing meetings, podcast, interviews, you know. Is that something? Is it good to have a balance of putting things out, you know, when you're, say, unemployed or employed, and then going, do you know what? Sometimes it's good to, I do say, but it's one of the podcasts I listened to, they talked about coaching in the shadows, you know, learning about learning a new language, doing something that's completely, you know, it's nobody knows about, but only two or three people know in your circle. Is it good to have a good network and also doing things that are just keeping yourself above the water so people know who you are, but you kind of have that way of thinking?
Yeah, I think throughout your whole coaching career, you need to be networking and building relationships, and that's how you grow. But you also need to keep updated, and you do that by all kinds of different things. It might be reading books, going to coaching seminars, contacting people, talking to them, acquiring new knowledge, there are new softwares coming out that you need to stay up to date with. You know, at one point, GPS came into it. At another point, Y-Scout or Huddle or whatever. You constantly need to update yourself. And you need to do that throughout your career. Because, unfortunately, this job, UEFA did a study, and the average time span that a head coach has in the men's highest league in Europe is 16 months. So, but once you get hired, your boss will tell you, yeah, we're going to build a new team. We're going to develop the play the young players, develop and look, think long term. But in reality, you might be out of your job a year and a half later. So during that time, You have to stay up to date. You have to be updated with everything regarding the job, and you need to network because you know, at some stage you're going to be unemployed and looking for your next job, and you got to be flexible. You got to be willing to either work in another country or a league below sometimes where you would like to be working, or you need to be able to do coach education or something different, or have a different set of skills. Do another kind of job for some time period while you get your next coaching job. So these are all things that come into factor. I remember as a young coach education director, I brought Howard Wilkinson to Iceland.
Yeah.
And he gave me this piece of paper. And that piece of paper said, at the top it said, "So you think you want to become a manager?" And then he had 10 questions. that you had to ask yourself in case you were willing to become a football manager? And those questions were all like, well, are you willing to commit your whole life and unbelievable amount of hours doing that job? And mere survival is going to be an achievement, because it's such a tough job. It's very competitive. It takes a lot of time. There are loads of sacrifices you have to make regarding, like, you know, you might sacrifice some family events because you have a match in the evening or on a weekend, or you need to travel. And like I said, there's not a lot of job security, so you need to be changing jobs a lot of the time. And well, if you want to make it a career and work on it for many, many years, then it's really, really hard. And it's good to ask yourself these questions in the beginning that Howard was asking. I didn't understand it as much when I was younger, but today I realize a lot more of what he was trying to say.
Yeah.
So, but yeah. It's also extremely, extremely giving or rewarding to do that job, to help young people become better at their sport and achieve their dreams to become a professional player and so on. No. Help them develop.
No, definitely. That was my question, was actually going to be, what does it take to be a manager? But you obviously just answered it, which was great. You know, maybe you should tell me that you can be, because you talk about balance, you know, and you know, trying to find that balance of, do you know what, sometimes it's great to spend time with your children or your wife or your husband, and it's great, that kind of thing, but it's also good to spend time on your own, learning new things. But it's that balance of, it's like, it's all football coaches, we all look at one thing and then, oh, there's another thing. Oh, and you go down a rabbit hole of trying to, you know, learn, oh, this is a great pattern. Oh, does who invented that? Or then you go and try and find the author, and it just gets that thing. But I think that comes from kind of mindset, you know, what kind of mindset do you have? Is it sometimes a growth mindset is great, but sometimes it's actually good to say, do you know what, I'm going to see at 6 o'clock, I'm finishing and I don't want to do any more. I'm going to spend time with my family, I'm going to watch a comedy. What does mindset mean to you? How would you define your mindset, and what's the kind of things you've had to deal with that's maybe lacked that kind of growth mindset, or I've had a bit of a setback?
Yeah, I think you definitely need a growth mindset in this job area, and you have to have some balance as well. It's hard at times. You will burn out if you just think it's all about being successful and hardworking and putting in the hours. In the end, you're going to burn out. So you need to have balance in your life. You need to have some other things to do as well, some other things to think about, whether it's raising your kids if you have them, or playing golf, or whatever, you know, doing something totally different from the sport, seeing your friends, going out, whatever it is. It cannot just be about football and coaching, even though you might be extremely interested in that. I would encourage coaches to also have something else going on for them in their lives. I think that's important. So yeah, it's tough to give a one perfect recipe for success. I don't think it exists, but you need to also maybe think about what type of personality you are and what you can bring to the job, because we all have different skill sets. But I think it is, like I said, extremely rewarding to have that mindset of developing people and developing your team. And once you leave the job, or you get sacked, which is the reality that can happen, but once you leave, that you're happy with the work you put in, that you did your best, and you helped some people along the way, you helped them improve, you put some structure in place that will help the club in the future, or your working place, and you've treated people well, and you've built good relationships. I think that's what you need to be happy about. You can't be bitter or resentful if you get laid off, if someone at the board or the president decides to change coaches. Then you just move on and think of it as a new beginning, rather than, oh, I'm I put in all this work and hours, and then I was just sacked, and I only got X number of months or a year and a half to do my job. It's not enough. And don't get stuck on those things. Just think about, okay, where's the next club, next people that I can help develop?
Yeah.
And have that type of mindset.
No, perfect. Thank you again for taking the time to talk to me, Siggy.
It's been an absolute joy. Thank you for talking to me.